Good morning. I now call this remote meeting of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bo.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Franson, present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins. Representative Hollins. Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein. Representative Igo.
Igo, present.
Representative Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Lippertz.
Present.
Representative Livesegard is excused. Representative Mecklens.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Members, we have a quorum. We have a really exciting, Representative Hornstein is here as well. We have an exciting topic today. We're going to be focusing on weatherization and hearing a new report from task force that the Department of Commerce conducted over the last several months. And so we will begin by hearing a presentation from Professor Gabe Chan and Professor Elise Harrington from the University of Minnesota to set the context for what weatherization programs look like in other states compared to Minnesota. And we will hear some of the folks who were involved in the task force, and then we'll turn to Representative Bierman presenting his bill that is building off of the task force's recommendations. So first, we will start with Professor Chan and Professor Harrington. Welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you so much, Chair Long and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify before you this morning. My name is Gabriel Chan. I'm joined here by my colleague, Elise Harrington, and we are professors at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School of Public Affairs, appearing here today in our own personal capacities and not on behalf of the university. As we will detail, we studied weatherization programs in states across the country, speaking to program implementers and state energy offices that have enacted significant expansions in their weatherization programs. Our research points to three findings of how states approach cost-effectively expanding weatherization that we believe are important for Minnesota to consider. First, directing state resources that are stable. Second, directing state resources that are flexible. And third, enabling weatherization programs to act strategically. We completed a landscape analysis of weatherization funding reports and implementation plans across Minnesota and 20 comparable states, and conducted a comparative case study analysis drawn from interviews with weatherization program offices and implementers in six states. The purpose of our research was to examine how other states are leveraging federal weatherization funding with other programs, utilizing new sources of capital for weatherization, and addressing barriers to expanding the reach of services provided by weatherization. Drawing from this research, we'll provide a picture of Minnesota's weatherization funding in comparison to selected other states. Since 1976, the Weatherization Assistance Program has provided free home energy upgrades to income-eligible households to save energy and ensure their home is a healthy and safe place to live. The Department of Energy estimates that nationally, the average weatherized home saves $280 per year in energy costs, with every dollar invested in weatherization returning $1.72 in energy-related benefits and $2.78 in non-energy benefits through, for example, economic growth and reduced environmental impacts. However, many families in Minnesota that are income eligible for weatherization will not receive the benefits of weatherization without considerable increases in resources and capacity. In program year 2019, Minnesota weatherized 1,907 residences using $20.5 million in funding. Based only on program operations cost in 2019, Minnesota had an average cost of $7,658 per weatherized unit. Over 99% of the weatherization funds administered by the Minnesota Department of Commerce come from the federal government. In 2019, More than half of these federal funds came from the U.S. Department of Energy, with the remainder primarily from a transfer of funds from the Department of Health and Human Services Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP. Many of Minnesota's weatherization implementers also leverage utility funds from the Conservation Improvement Program's Low Income Spending Requirement, which is set to increase following the passage of the Energy Conservation Optimization, or ECO Act, of 2021. In our research, we found that many states reported challenges due to DOE's verification requirements for weatherization funding, and many have gradually increased non-federal funding to supplement DOE funds. Overall, we found examples of different approaches to raising additional non-federal funds for weatherization. Several states direct funds to weatherization from a utility rate surcharge, sometimes as a flexible system benefit charge. For example, Wisconsin's system benefit charge funded over $50 million in weatherization in 2019. Or in New York, a system benefit charge funds the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, NYSERDA, to offer free efficiency and community solar subscriptions to income-qualified customers. And this has given NYSERDA the flexibility to pilot new integrations of weatherization with health. Some states direct levies on specific economic activities to fund weatherization. For example, Colorado has historically directed funds from a severance tax on the extraction of minerals and fossil fuels, which funded $2 million of weatherization in 2019. As another example, Vermont directs funding from a fuel tax, which funded $7 million of weatherization in 2019. Having now gone over how other states complement federal funds with non-federal funds, and how other states have approached raising funds for weatherization, I'll pass it over to my colleague, Lise Harrington, to discuss how non-federal funds enable cost-effective, higher-return weatherization.
We identified innovative policies and administrative practices that states developed as they expanded the impact of their weatherization programs. Additional details on each case and findings related to implementation practices are included in our report, but here we focus on three findings most directly related to legislative approaches that have increased the effectiveness of expanded weatherization funding. Our first finding is funding stability. Non-federal funds can help provide funding stability to reduce the ups and downs of federal funds and allow implementers to scale up their capacity to strategically address priority areas. Based on state experiences with sustainably increasing funding, we found that, to the extent feasible, expanding available funds for weatherization should emphasize stable funding sources to enable program managers and implementers to ramp up and maintain expanded programs. Department of Energy funds can be used for select health and safety measures, but we found that states add more flexible non-DOE funds for weatherization to ensure that they are able to maximize the benefits provided to each household. The federal increase in funding from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or ARRA, was mentioned by nearly every state, with most reporting substantial increases in homes weatherized during this period. ARRA offered significant funding increases from 2009 to 2012, but funding levels were not sustained. States described that weatherization implementing agencies had to lay off staff following ARRA, which made subsequent efforts to hire new staff more difficult and resulted in a loss of capacity, as trained staff could not be sustained after funding declined. Our second finding is funding flexibility. States reported using flexible funding specifically to address the causes of deferrals to serve the households most in need of weatherization services. Flexible non-federal funds can fund pre-weatherization activities that address the non-energy related building improvements necessary before implementing energy saving measures. Further, flexible non-federal funding can enable weatherization implementers to deliver non-energy benefits that can be cost-effectively delivered to low-income households in conjunction with weatherization services. States spoke about the challenges of having to forego providing service to potential customers who live in houses with underlying issues such as vermiculite and mold. These households would benefit significantly from weatherization services, but cannot be served due to non-energy related conditions in the household. We found that as part of expanding available funds for weatherization, states are positioned to allocate flexible funds specifically to address deferrals, including avoiding future deferrals and returning to previously deferred homes. This is what Vermont found in their program as they started an effort to address homes that would have been deferred because of vermiculite, which represented a priority equity issue in the state. The flexibility to address vermiculite-based deferrals was possible in large part due to the availability of non-federal funding, typically comprising about 85% of the state's total funding. Our third finding is a strategic use of funding, which is enabled when non-federal funding creates stability and flexibility. Implementing weatherization requires planning over many years to build administrative and workforce capacity. Efforts to expand weatherization are most cost-effective when funding is committed strategically over multiple years to enable program administrators to build up the capacity they need. We found that establishing strategic longer-term goals allowed for states to align direct investments in households with the buildup of both administrative capacity and the workforce required to support an expanded weatherization program. For example, stable and flexible non-federal funds enabled New York to act strategically to pilot weatherization with Medicaid's value-based payment system. The impetus to seek opportunities to combine weatherization and health was established by an executive order to incorporate health into investments and program planning across the state. This established a strategic goal that encouraged new collaborations across agencies in the state. From this, New York initiated a pilot to simultaneously address asthma precursors, home comfort and safety, medical bills, and energy bills in 500 homes. Implementing a weatherization Medicaid integration required a complex strategic collaboration between state agencies over 2 years, which was only possible with stable and flexible non-federal funding directed by an overarching goal. In addition to considerations specifically related to stable funding increases, funding flexibility, and strategic funding alignment with long-term goals, our case studies identified key lessons related to multifamily weatherization and workforce development. For multifamily weatherization, states such as Colorado and Vermont emphasize building specialized agencies or workforce capacity to address multifamily homes, given the differences between weatherizing multifamily homes compared to single-family homes. With respect to broader workforce considerations, all states included in our study described limitations in their ability to offer competitive wages and working conditions. Building a weatherization workforce will require not only new sources of stable and flexible funding, but collaborative efforts to provide training and garner new interest in weatherization. Finally, all of our case studies refer to the potential administrative burdens as barriers to rapidly scaling up weatherization programs. This includes complying with DOE performance metrics, but also the challenges of linking or braiding multiple funding streams that may have different goals, metrics, and in some cases, data management practices. Other states suggested that any expansion of weatherization funds should include practices that aim to reduce the administrative burdens on implementers, contractors, and program managers. Each of these examples demonstrates ways that the states are actively expanding their weatherization programs with new sources of funding to reach more households with services that provide energy savings plus health and safety benefits. Please find more information on each of our findings detailed in our research report available as a part of the Department of Commerce's Weatherization Working Group report. Thank you, and we welcome your questions.
Thank you so much. Next, we're going to hear from some of the participants of the working group, and we'll start with Commissioner Arnold. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Arnold.
Thank you, Chair Long, members, and in particular, I want to thank the members of the working group who are here. So my name is Grace Arnold. For the record, I am the commissioner of the Department of Commerce. I'm joined today by John Kelly, who's our Director of Government Affairs, and Michelle Gramsci, who's the director of the State Energy Office and oversees our weatherization program. She helped to lead this work. All right, John, can you go to the next slide? Thank you. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present today and want to lead with a really sincere thanks, which I said before, but it's really, I can't thank the leaders of the committee enough. And the folks who worked on the working group. So Chair Long and Representative Bierman, as well as Chair Sundjom in the Senate. And then the list of folks who you see here. These folks did a really significant lift and added countless hours to defining and refining the recommendations that were presented by the working group in the report. Commerce staff served as resources for data and details about the existing program, and the work groups assessed this information along with the research you just heard from the University of Minnesota and built out a significant list of recommendations. These recommendations were built in a collaborative environment, but they're not a consensus-based, we did not take a consensus-based approach, which was intentional in order to reflect the variety of perspectives needed to address ongoing barriers to service. In 2021, in partnership with both the House and Senate Energy Committee leadership, Commerce launched this informal weatherization working group to engage a diverse group of stakeholders in developing recommendations for both the state legislature and the Department of Commerce. The overarching goal was to identify strategies to serve more households, remove barriers to service, weather market changes, ensure a strong and consistent workforce, and consistently provide a high level of service for all income-eligible households throughout Minnesota. Seven large group meetings took place between October and February of this year, as well as a significant amount of work in the small groups, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Before we move on to recommendations, I just want to give a quick overview of the program. I know that the folks at the university did a little bit of that, but we'll do some of that as well. So the Federal Weatherization Assistance Program was established by the federal government over 45 years ago and is run through the U.S. Department of Energy to both increase the energy efficiency of income-eligible households and to provide renewable energy systems in order to reduce the total energy costs paid by the household while improving their health and safety. This here is the rule, the federal rules, so you can kind of see the direct language here. The program prioritizes services for the vulnerable, in particular the elderly, people with disabilities, families with children, high residential energy users, and households with high energy burden defined as those households that pay a greater amount of their income to household energy costs. This one-time infusion into a house includes measures, so it's an infusion of things. So it includes exterior wall and attic insulation, air leakage reduction, you can get a new furnace, boiler, or water heater repaired, or you can get a new one, and education on how to reduce overall household energy use, such as using a programmable thermostat. I will note that weatherization is impactful. A national study that found that for every dollar invested in the Department of Energy Weatherization Assistance Program, so the program is currently structured, $1.72 is generated in direct energy benefits, and then $2.78 are generated in non-energy benefits, such as things like reduced medical bills. As I mentioned, so we'll kind of hop back to the working group now. As I mentioned, there were three subgroups within the working group. The first focused on goal number one, which is identifying additional funding mechanisms and partnerships to do a few things. Stabilize funding, reduce the deferral rate, increase the number of households served, leverage additional non-energy benefits, and increase competitiveness with funding opportunities. The second working group focused on the second goal, which was to improve program equity. They were charged with identifying potential program inequities. For example, if renters didn't have the same access to the program as homeowners or manufactured housing dwellers, same specific demographic groups or geographic areas as well. Consider the group was to consider causes of inequitable program service and identify strategies to increase program equity. The third group focused on the third goal, which was to remove additional barriers to providing weatherization assistance program services, including analyzing and developing methods to address workforce and supply chain issues, and assessing additional barriers and identifying additional strategies to address those barriers. The program faces multiple barriers to service that prevent eligible households from receiving service. One is funding limitations. The amount of funding and restrictions on how that funding is used is the first major theme that the work group one took up. For example, a 2017 assessment found that in order to serve all income-eligible households in the state, it would take 291 years. In addition, federal funds limit timeframes for service and have stringent proof of eligibility requirements, which result in serving fewer renters in multifamily buildings. Finally, what measures can be done in the home is also limited by the federal funding. So, for example, an asbestos-laden vermiculite cannot be removed with U.S. Department of Energy funding. We heard that from the university folks as well. This leads to a second area of concern, which is deferrals. Workgroup 1 also looked at the issue of deferrals. In program year 2020, which is July 2020 to June 2021, we found that the deferral rate was up to 50% in certain territories, and that was based on asbestos insulation being present, issues of the physical structure like inaccessible crawl spaces or major roofing issues, electrical issues such as knob and tube wiring, bulk water issues that can cause mold and moisture in the home, excessive clutter that limits workers from being able to access areas of the home, or major plumbing and sewage-related issues. So now that sort of leads into the third area of concern, which was programmatic inequity. So the second work group dug into where households are not receiving services based on program limitations and what's needed to address those inequities. For example, in program year 19, so we're going to have fun with program year and real years, 19 and 20, due to funding limitations, only 10% and 9% respectively of all households receiving comprehensive weatherization services were renters. This group also noted that there's a significant need for resources to focus on gathering and analyzing additional data to identify and address any program inequities and to ensure that participation rates are closely aligned with zip code level demographic data, including race, housing type, and energy burden. So finally, I'll talk about workforce and supply chain issues. A recent survey found of the 23 local service providers that cover the state identified that there are currently 284 contractors actively involved in the weatherization network. With recent increase in funding, it was identified that there is a current need for an additional 173 contractors to complete weatherization work, including 29 electrical contractors, 68 HVAC contractors, 27 shell contractors, 28 solar contractors, and 45 asbestos removal contractors. So you've heard recommendations made by the University of Minnesota from a national analysis. This working group identified approximately 20 legislative recommendations and 45 weatherization assistant program level recommendations, all of which can be found in the report. The major legislative themes focused around funding, workforce, and increased outreach to ensure equitable service for all income eligible households. I recommend you take a look at the whole report for details and thoughts. And I will note that the working group was collaborative. And while I will note that the working group was collaborative in nature, again, I'll just highlight that the recommendations were not consensus-based, but reflect a variety of perspectives needed to address ongoing barriers to service. With that said, I'd like to highlight two major themes in the legislative recommendations that were bubbled up by the work group. One, state funding is necessary. It's necessary to effectively ramp up and stabilize a strong market that has a solid training base and can support the ongoing development of a highly skilled workforce. Second, state funding is needed to address pre-weatherization measures and other high-impact energy and health measures that are limited by the federal funds and the restrictions on those funds. Second, the funding needs to be flexible. Flexibility within the funding will allow for more time needed to systemically address current barriers to serving renters, to provide time to ramp up training opportunities, and to maintain a constant funding amount in the midst of variable funding levels. You heard the university folks talk about that as well. Flexibility within the funding is also needed to increase outreach to underserved communities, to streamline services, and to fund community outreach and other programs or legislation that support weatherization assistance eligible households. The Commerce Department looks forward to working with the legislature and stakeholders this session around the important work of weatherizing more income eligible homes in Minnesota. And I will just note that I need to leave this hearing for another meeting. John and Michelle are here to answer any questions you have for the department. And I'd like to thank you, Chair Long, and members for your time. And again, I'd like to thank the Weatherization Working Group. We really appreciated all the work they did.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Arnold, for being here. So we have three individuals who participated in the working group. We're going to make some comments to the working group report, and then we'll move to questions. First, we have Becky Olson with the Center for Energy and Environment. Welcome to the committee. You, I think, are on mute.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Chair Long and members of the Energy Committee. I'm Rebecca Olson, Senior Director of Residential and Community Energy for the Center for Energy and Environment. I served as a member of the Weatherization Assistance Group or Program Working Group mentioned by Commissioner Arnold. This group explored ways to leverage existing funding sources and look for new funding sources to increase the number of low-income customers served in Minnesota. I support the report's recommendations being made to the Minnesota Legislature and is presented to this committee today. As a Minnesota nonprofit energy organization, CE's mission is to discover and deploy the most effective energy solutions that strengthen the economy and improve the environment. Through our work across Minnesota as a program implementer, research institution, lending center, and training body, we know firsthand the benefits that energy programs serving low-income households have on those customers and our communities at large. We are also familiar with the challenges and opportunities that come with increasing energy efficiency work. It is crucial that we as a state are intentional about building an equitable and sustainable system for energy efficiency. We can do this by creating long-term programs with dependable funding that create desirable careers with families sustaining wages. Having additional long-term state funding to supplement federal and utility dollars for income-qualified customers will greatly expand the reach that these highly effective, cost-effective, and long-standing programs have on our community members. It will also signal to the trades that deliver these services, like energy auditing companies, HVAC contractors, and insulation companies, that Minnesota is committed to funding this work for the long term. This will give them the confidence to invest time and resources into expanding hiring and training to meet the long-term demand. I also support the recommendation to allow flexibility in new funding to not only cover energy improvements in qualified homes, but to pay for efforts such as workforce training and mentorship, increased in targeted outreach and marketing campaigns, and structural or safety home repairs necessary for energy improvements. These activities will ensure more diversity, equity, and inclusion in these programs to teach, serve, and employ our most underrepresented and least resourced community members throughout Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of these recommendations.
Thank you so much. Next, we will hear from Ethan Warner with CenterPoint Energy. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Long and members of the Energy Committee. I'm assuming you can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I am the regulatory manager for CenterPoint Energy's energy efficiency programs. Thank you for the opportunity today to speak about my recent participation in the Federal Weatherization Assistance Program Working Group and to voice the company's support from some key recommendations from this group's report. As background, CenterPoint Energy is the largest natural gas distribution business in Minnesota, serving over 900,000 customers across 260 communities. The company has been operating energy efficiency programs for over 35 years, including offering programs for income-qualified customers. Weatherization is particularly important because it helps keep utility bills low and ensures residents' health and comfort in our cold climate. The majority of our energy efficiency funds for income-qualified customers supplement and support the very important federal weatherization assistance program in our state, as well as the nonprofit organizations that are delivering those services to our customers. Let me thank the Department of Commerce for pulling together the working group in order to assess the current barriers to weatherization services. Discussions during these meetings helped highlight how there are currently constraints on weatherization beyond what the current weatherization program and the energy efficiency programs in our state can address. In particular, it's worth noting in areas of the state where there are no utility energy efficiency programs available to help supplement the weatherization assistance program. Therefore, CenterPoint Energy supports several recommendations in the report. Specifically, Minnesota should supplement weatherization program resources and ensure new, equitable, and stable long-term funding to match the needs of the state as assessed by various stakeholders as part of this report. Furthermore, CenterPoint supports allowing the flexibility to use a portion of these allocated funds for addressing major barriers to service and increased capacity to complete weatherization projects, including but not limited to addressing non-energy related barriers to completing weatherization in the home, skilled workforce shortages affecting the capacity to complete weatherization projects, and outreach to the communities in need of these services. Based on our experiences running energy efficiency programs, it is necessary to address these other areas in order to meet the weatherization needs and to keep Minnesota's healthy on top of what the state is already doing. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak on this important topic, and we look forward to working with legislators and other stakeholders as this conversation continues.
Thank you so much. And finally, we will hear from Catherine Taken with Minnesota Housing Finance. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long and committee members. I am Catherine Taken, a clean energy policy specialist with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Minnesota Housing participated in this working group in part to help consider pathways for easing participation in weatherization by affordable multifamily housing. There are currently several barriers that make it difficult for multifamily housing to participate in weatherization. First, especially for larger multifamily buildings, it can be difficult to complete the weatherization services within the federal fiscal year due to the larger scope of these projects. Also, owners of larger 5+ unit multifamily buildings are usually required to provide a financial contribution in order to participate in weatherization, although the weatherization service providers do have some flexibility as to the amount that the owner is required to contribute. Therefore, from our perspective, it's helpful when affordable multifamily buildings can layer weatherization services alongside other housing finance pathways, such as, but not limited to, the publicly owned housing program, which is administered by Minnesota Housing. Coordinating multiple programs together is extremely beneficial. It can help count towards the owner contribution and allow for more substantial and holistic upgrades to take place within a building. However, it adds a lot of complexity. For example, program timelines, income eligibility requirements, and other requirements such as Davis-Bacon may not always align nicely between multiple programs and will need to be coordinated. This coordination takes a lot of time and can also lead towards those difficulties completing the weatherization program within the federal fiscal year requirements. That being said, weatherization is a very important program that provides an immense amount of benefit to the owners and residents of affordable multifamily buildings. Minnesota Housing supports this report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, I have one question to begin, but I just wanted to reiterate my thanks for the working group for all their hard work over many, many hours of meetings and putting this great report together. And it was a really broad cross-section of participants from everybody who really touches the weatherization program. And so well done on this report. I think this report is well-timed as well, considering the affordability challenges that are particularly acute this year, and knowing that this can save homeowners and residents money. But I think the points that stick out to me, Commissioner Arnold mentioned that we have, at our current pace, would take 300 years just about to weatherize all eligible homes in Minnesota. So my question is for Professors Chan and Harrington in the comparison report that you did. I think you noted that Minnesota did about 1,900 homes weatherized last year. And I think in the report, you note that Wisconsin, our neighbor, does close to 6,000, and Massachusetts, the state that is not that much bigger than we are, does, I think, close to 13,000, if I'm not mistaken. So we have some comparable states that are doing quite a lot more. And I'm just curious how Minnesota fits into that 20-state range you did.
Yeah, that's thank you, Chair Long, for the question. And I think you make an excellent point in a comparison that I think demonstrates the ways that Minnesota could expand the program by looking at the numbers that Wisconsin has and thinking about how has Wisconsin provided that kind of flexible and stable funding in order to expand their program. I will have to check on exactly the number when it comes to the kind of where Minnesota ranks in terms of the number of homes weatherized each year in comparison to other states. But that table is available in the report, and I will pull it up in a moment. But you will see that there are comparable states doing more and represents an opportunity for us to achieve similar goals here in Minnesota.
Thank you so much. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the presentation of the presenters also. I think weatherization is important, and I certainly want to support it wherever I can. I do have three concerns from constituents that have come up. And the first one would be some people over-weatherize their house to the point where it doesn't breathe, and therefore they have some additional problems inside the house, whether it's radon accumulation, certain types of moisture accumulation or whatever. Is there a balance between, you know, I like to weatherize my own house, okay? But I have kept that in mind that you do need a little bit of breathing in the house too. I think it's also healthier for the people inside. If one of the testifiers would want to address that.
Sure. Director Grancy, would you like to take a crack at that?
Thank you, Chair Long, representatives. I think that's a fantastic question. And within the federally prescribed program, both health and safety and energy is continuously a balanced approach. There is a comprehensive quality control inspection that takes place, an energy audit that is comprehensive in nature at the beginning to ensure that there's an understanding of what the ventilation rates will be, what the impact will be of the various measures to both ensure that the energy savings are there and that if additional ventilation needs to be added, that that is added in the process. Where that links again to some of the comments made today is based on the fact that when we go into a home and see that tightening up that home due to, say, existing mold and moisture or other issues in the home would exacerbate it and make it worse, we have to walk away from those homes. So any time that we can go in and do pre-weatherization measures to ensure that ventilation, mold and moisture, any of those issues are addressed before weatherization, that's an ideal circumstance because we will not go into a home unless we can ensure both of those components are measured.
And Director Grancy, just to, if you wouldn't mind adding on to that point, that the funding in this bill would help with some of those mold issues and the like because of the restrictions on federal funding. Is that right?
Yes. So both the university in their presentation and the working group identified the need that any funding through this bill or any bill that comes forth really does need to be flexible in nature so that we can ensure that those deferrals are addressed and that all the homes we can get into. I will also note that we do have a change item in the governor's budget, and so we really look forward to working with you all in the development of this work.
Representative Grunhagen, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Chair. Thanks for that response. And I just think it's something to keep in mind that as we go forward here. The next question I have, the other concern, and this happened right in my neighborhood. I live out in the country, but a neighboring family moved into a farm place. They went to the county, this is a few years ago, and they got all kinds of money to update their house and weatherize it. Now, I think they were supposed to live in it after they did all that. I got new siding. It was an old farmhouse, and they got new siding, and I mean, there's a lot of updates to the house. They were supposed to live in there. I can't remember if it was 7 years or 10 years or what it was, but about a year after they did it, they sold the house, took the money, and moved to a different state, and they did come out very well financially out of it. Because we happen to know the couple that bought the place. We got to know that pretty well. And the updates are real nice. But again, They simply used the program through the county to update the house. And I think they did it, I hate to say deliberately, but it almost seemed that way. Are there any checks or balances in this money to keep that from happening? Where somebody, and again, this is a nice family, but I mean, they took the county for a pretty handsome sum.
Sure. That doesn't particularly sound like the weatherization program. It might be a county program, but I'll see if Director Gransey might have a better sense of that.
You know.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Representative. That is not a program that program is not part of the weatherization assistance program. However, I understand the concern that you're raising, and I think the one reality just to keep in mind with this federal program is that we are predominantly serving not only income eligible households, but the hardest hit income eligible households. So while individuals may move out of that housing, most often other low income, income eligible houses are moving into that housing. So for instance, with the energy assistance program, which is where the individuals are identified and then served through weatherization, the average household has a income of about $18,000 per an average family size of four. So we're talking individuals that are definitely, even if they sell the home, they are not making bank, right? They're not abusing the system through this process.
Okay.
One
last question, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your courtesy. Thanks for that response. The other concern I've had is that the people will hire someone to do the update and weatherization of their house, and the work is not done very well. If not, could you say the word shoddy? They're not happy, but the price is very high. Somebody else talked about the Davis-Bacon Act and how to coordinate with that. Do they have any recourse in terms of filing a complaint or something about that particular contractor? Because I know most of them are honest and do a great job. I got a lot of contractors insured through my insurance agency. But every once in a while, just like, you know, insurance salesmen, and I'm an insurance salesman, you get somebody with a little bit of a shady approach. So just wondering if there's any consequence for homeowners that are not satisfied with the work and yet the price is pretty high. Thank you.
Director Gransey.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Long, Representative. Again, the Weatherization Assistance Program has very stringent rules. There's national standard work specifications that all of the work has to be done to. There is a energy audit done by a certified energy audit at the local level that ensures the work that ought to be done rather than, say, work that would be done just through sales, right? This is specific work that has to be done in order to ensure full comprehensive weatherization. At the end of that process, there's a quality control inspector that goes through and ensures that all the work was done, or there is a callback to ensure that it is corrected if there's any issue. If after that time there is still any concern, which there really ought not to be, we do also have a process in which that individual household can reach out to the state and raise a complaint. I will say we seldom, if never, receive any of those complaints because at the local level, the 23 service providers are really implementing a high quality program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative,
for allowing me to ask those questions. Thanks for your response.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you. I have a couple questions, and I had to look away for a few minutes, so I hope I didn't miss this. But my first question was about income eligibility and what that was. And Ms. Gransey, you just talked about the average home being $18,000 per household for a family of four. So it seems like a pretty small number of folks that, not small, but I mean, the program doesn't seem expansive if that's the range. So I just have a question about that income eligibility requirements, if you could help with that. And then also I wondered what conclusions did you come to in regard to landlords versus renters or possible solutions within the working group? Thanks much.
So we'll go to Director Grancy for the first part of the question, and then we'll go to Ms. Taken for the second part.
Thank you, Chair Long, Representative. So with that first question on income eligibility, there is a standard income eligibility through the Energy Assistance Program, which is up to 50% state median income, or currently it can go all the way to 60% state median income. That also aligns with 200% federal poverty level, which is the requirement within weatherization. I noted the $18,000 per family of four. That's not the limit, but that's where we often see the prioritization because, as the commissioner noted, we need to prioritize those households that are most vulnerable. And so without expansive funding, those are the folks that we're able to serve at this time.
Ms. Taken.
Thank you, Chair Long and committee members. So yes, the report does talk about the need to come up with some solutions for serving renters and landlords, especially renters in larger multifamily buildings. Rental, about 28% of Minnesotans do live in rental units, and serving the weatherization program, especially in rental units that are in larger multifamily buildings, is difficult. Some of the solutions that the report talked about included pathways for providing pre-weatherization support to larger multifamily buildings prior to weatherization to kind of help extend the timeline that projects can take who are accessing weatherization. The report also discusses a little bit about providing support to multifamily owners who may be having difficulties covering the owner contribution that is needed to participate in weatherization if you own a multifamily building. Although the report also discusses that the amount needed to provide for an owner contribution can be flexible based on the service provider. And I think Ms. Harrington and Mr. Chan from the university did a really good job discussing pathways that other states have used to support multifamily weatherization, including having, you know, different options such as a single multifamily weatherization service provider that serves the entire state, some opt-out clauses, things like that. So that's definitely part of the report, and happy to answer any follow-ups.
Professor Harrington, did you want to chime in?
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, Representative Christensen. We did find some really great examples of what other states are doing to address multifamily, given that, you know, some of those practices are not so easily transferable from a single family home to multifamily. And as was just mentioned, the idea of building that specific capacity, either through an implementing agency across the state that is specifically addressing multifamily weatherization, which is what we saw in Vermont. Or other options, you know, New York has taken an approach where they really try to develop very, very localized expertise to address multifamily weatherization to ensure that there is that knowledge about kind of any particularities about a multifamily building that might need to be addressed in the weatherization process. And so thinking about how this fits as a component of building out this capacity to address work weatherization in the state. Thank you.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for those answers. I do support this program fully, so I want everyone to know that. I do have just a quick follow-up, Ms. Harrington. So what about landlords or rental providers that own single-family homes that are rentals? I keep hearing the word multifamily, so I'm wondering how that works into it.
Professor Harrington.
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, Representative Christensen. We actually didn't get into the single-family renter market as much as we did the multifamily one. So I cannot comment on that as clearly as multifamily, but imagine perhaps others might be able to bring that perspective.
Anybody want to chime in on single family rentals? Director Grancy or Ms. Olson?
I'll maybe just chime in since somebody else was, but just that I think some of the biggest challenges for serving multifamily versus single family are more about the structure and the geometry of the building. Some of those challenges of understanding the different systems, but also if you're looking at a single family rental, getting income qualification verification for one renter versus 20 renters, that is a big challenge and a big difference too. So I think that single family rental is more easily served in our current structure and framework. And maybe Dr. Granzi can talk about that specific to the weatherization program. But as a program implementer for utility programs, we find that even, you know, 1 to 4 units kind of can be treated similarly to single family. And once you get to those bigger buildings, there's just more complexity.
Good questions, Representative Christensen. Well, thank you all to our presenters again on the working group report. Now we're going to move to Representative Bierman's bill drafted from the working group report. So Representative Bierman, please describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I want to thank you for taking the time to think about and review the draft bill today. First, I do want to thank Commissioner Arnold and Director Grancy and Assistant Commissioner Kelly and all the testifiers we've heard from today, especially the U of M testifiers, Mr. Chan and Ms. Harrington, for their deeper dive on the programs around the country. That was extremely beneficial for us to know. I want to thank all the members of the task force, of course, because their time and talents that they put in over the last few months have been integral to this information that we're receiving today, and that truly points the way forward as outlined in the report. So I encourage all members to read the report. It doesn't take that long, and there's just a lot of great information in there. And I appreciate the good questions and comments from every member today so far, and we'll have some more as we go. We know what a robust weatherization program will do. It does bear, some lines bear repeating. It will create local jobs and economic activity in all of our communities. It will lower utility bills by conserving energy, reduce stress on the power grid, increase energy equity, helping those Minnesotans most in need in all our districts. Will reduce greenhouse gas emissions and make homes more resilient to the changes in our weather patterns. As the task force revealed today, by all measures, we in Minnesota lack behind our neighboring states in assisting those in need and our own economic well-being in regards to weatherization activity. Presently, as noted at least once or twice, we have nearly a 300-year backlog of eligible homes across the counties of Minnesota at the current pace of weatherization. The bill before you today seeks to remedy this condition. So this bill proposal is a call to action to all of you in this committee, to all of us in this state. The public, all of our constituents, want to see us come together to solve problems. This bill is the chance to show we are there for them, working for their well-being and doing the work that could be for the benefit of all. In brief, the bill would utilize U.S. Department of Energy funding, augmented by general fund dollars, to expand the number of units receiving weatherization services with a focus on reducing the many deferrals we have across the state. The bill will address workforce training, expand outreach, and extend federal timelines for project completion. The Weather Assistance Program is a comprehensive whole house approach that averages 20 to 30% energy reduction per house. Weatherization provides a more permanent solution to energy burden. It is an upstream approach. There's a lot of work to be done on this draft. Our goal was to present it as a starting point for further discussion in light of the task force report presented today. So we'll hear from a few more testifiers, and then I look forward to members' comments and the continuing work on this legislation for this session. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. We have five individuals signed up to testify, and first we will start with Bill Grant with Minnesota Community Action Partnership. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Bill Grant, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Community Action Partnership. The partnership represents the 24 community action agencies that serve all 87 counties in Minnesota, 19 of whom deliver weatherization assistance to eligible households throughout much of the state. I want to thank Representative Bierman for agreeing to author this critically important legislation. Through the federal weatherization program, we've been weatherizing single-family homes and multifamily rental buildings since the late 1970s. At the current rate of homes completed, as you've heard, it'll take nearly 300 years to weatherize all of the income-eligible homes in Minnesota. The bill in front of you today would allow us to accelerate that pace significantly by addressing the two major barriers to program achievement: severe workforce shortages and restrictive federal program rules. As is the case in many sectors of our economy, challenges in attracting, training, and retaining a skilled workforce is causing worker shortages in the weatherization industry. In Minnesota, we have a mix of contractor-based programs and those that utilize their own crews. However, in order to perform weatherization work, both local contractors and crews need staff with appropriate training and certification. These standards are necessary to protect homeowners and renters and to assure high-quality work. The apprenticeship grant program in Section 4 of Representative Bierman's bill addresses the gap between available workers and the training they need to perform weatherization work. It will also assist in the development of training infrastructure, a much-needed resource since there is only one accredited training facility in Minnesota today. As you have heard, federal program rules prevent expenditures on home repairs that must be completed before many homes can be weatherized. Up to half of the homes otherwise eligible for services must be deferred due to problems ranging from asbestos-laden insulation, outdated wiring, failing roofs, and inaccessible crawl spaces, problems common in many older homes. Supplemental and more flexible state funding provided for in Section 3 of the bill would be a bridge to the federal program by allowing necessary repairs to take place prior to implementing traditional weatherization services. I should mention that there may be a need to address conformity with the bill that was passed last year, the ECO Act, with regards to changes that were made to the low-income SIP program. Those of you in business have probably heard of the triple bottom line: profit, people, and the planet. Weatherization goes one better by saving consumers money on energy costs, reducing climate warming emissions otherwise released to heat homes, restoring and increasing the value of aging housing stock, and preserving affordable housing that is now in critically short supply. The investments outlined in Representative Bierman's bill will deliver great value to Minnesota taxpayers, communities, and those who struggle every day to make ends meet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Grant. Next, we will hear from Annie Levinson-Falk with the City's Citizens Utility Board. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk, and I'm Executive Director of the Nonprofit Citizens Utility Board, or CUB. CUB advocates in the consumer interest of the legislature and the Public Utilities Commission, and we consult with individuals around the state, helping people find the best ways to save money on their home energy bills or avoid utility disconnection. As you all know, energy is an important part of a household budget, especially for lower income households. While an average Minnesota household might spend about 2% of their family income on energy, it can be upwards of 30% for low-income households. And that's why CUB staff often helps people figure out the best ways to fix the ways that their homes leak heat or otherwise waste energy. And this can make the biggest difference for people who spend the highest portion of their income on energy. But unfortunately, those are often the households who have the least ability to afford the upfront investment in energy efficiency, even if it can pay off big over the longer term. And the weatherization program is a very helpful resource for people who qualify. In addition to reducing bills and the other benefits that you've already heard of, weatherization helps people be more resilient to inflation, extreme temperatures, price spikes, and situations like we're seeing now where energy bills are way up. I think everyone is probably aware that we're seeing fuel prices around their highest level in years. And anytime that happens, it's going to be difficult for people, but if you can help people reduce the amount of energy that you need overall, it can make a big difference. I think it's smart for Minnesota to be thinking ahead to the big increase in weatherization funding that's coming our way from the federal government, anticipate the challenges that could prevent us from being able to use that money, and be prepared so that we don't leave that free money on the table. And I thank Representative Bierman for bringing forward this bill.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Mario Ojeda with Fresh Energy. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Mario Ojeda. I'm a policy associate on the Energy Access and Equity team at Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a Minnesota-based clean energy policy nonprofit, and we've long advocated for increased investment in energy efficiency programs aimed at supporting Minnesotans who need it the most. Fresh Energy is pleased to testify in favor of Representative Bierman's bill that establishes the Weatherization Apprenticeship Grant Program. Establishing this program will go a long way towards decreasing the energy burden on Minnesotans across the state, especially at a time when energy costs are rising. Additionally, it will set up our workforce for success in creating more jobs and more training opportunities within the energy efficiency sector. Energy burden is 4 times higher for under-resourced households than it is for the average Minnesota household. Under-resourced households on average experience an energy burden of 8% compared to a state average of 2%. Some households across the state experience even higher energy burdens, closer to 30, as Annie had just mentioned. For these families, that means that 30% of their entire income is spent just on energy bills alone, and this doesn't even include other household expenses. These disparities underscore the importance of investing in programs like the Weatherization Assistance Program and pre-weatherization efforts, along with investing in the people who are needed to do this type of work. The Weatherization Assistance Program funds home repairs and energy upgrades for under-resourced households that will save Minnesota families more money on their energy bills while also making their homes healthier places to live. Pre-weatherization addresses health and safety hazards that aren't typically within the scope of energy upgrades but is necessary before a home can be weatherized. Funding for this for pre-weatherization work helps to expand energy affordability to more households. It provides significant health and safety benefits, and when paired with weatherization, it could substantially reduce the energy burden for Minnesota families who could benefit the most from this. For all these reasons, we support increased investment not only in the weatherization program, but in the people of Minnesota. This bill emphasizes the importance of investing in a smooth energy transition and ensuring that Minnesotans have the proper tools and training that they need to succeed in this new economy. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you so much. And next we will hear from Liz Coppola. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Liz Coppola, and I work as executive director of Mahabi Otwa Community Action Partnership, which serves low-income people in Manoman, Hubbard, Becker, Ottertail, and Wadena counties. Our work is to help people help themselves and each other on the path to economic self-sufficiency. Last year, we assisted over 9,000 utility payments and increase the efficiency of over 100 homes through weatherization. The two biggest challenges in our weatherization work are both addressed in this bill. One challenge is what we call deferrals in the industry. This is when a housing unit doesn't qualify for weatherization because of some defect in the home. We can't increase the efficiency of a home that has a big hole in the roof, for example. And federal weatherization funding doesn't give us the flexibility to fix the hole in the roof. The homeowner often lacks the resources to fix it themselves or to access funding to fix it. So the project remains unfinished for years with additional tarps or patches of tin. The second big challenge we have is a shortage of contractors in our region. To weatherize a home, our weatherization auditors visit the home, find opportunities for efficiencies, and then we hire local contractors, electricians, HVAC, et cetera, to come in and do the work. Contractors are often tied up with bigger projects and don't have the time or staffing to travel many miles to reach the homes we have spread across our 5,000 square mile region. This is why I was pleased to join colleagues from across the energy sector in a weatherization work group over the past many months to develop the recommendations that landed in this bill. With steady funding and strong investment in workforce development, contractors can confidently invest in their businesses. We can train apprentices to get into the trades. We can work with low-income clients and with students to pursue these good-paying jobs. We can help new entrepreneurs access the supplies they need to get started in the field. This bill will also create opportunities for stronger and deeper partnerships on the program side to address deferrals by packaging resources to assist homeowners and renters rather than leaving it on them to navigate the complexities of various state or federal programs. This will allow us to direct resources to the people with the greatest need. Thank you for consideration of this bill, and thank you for your partnership in reducing energy costs for low-income households.
Thank you so much. And finally, we will hear from Joel Johnson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Joel Johnson. I represent the IBEW State Council. Our 16 locals around the state represent over 15,000 electric workers, many of whom will work on weatherization. While we appreciate the time and the effort that went into the report and its focus on support for families struggling to heat and cool their homes, we strongly oppose the creation of a new weatherization apprenticeship program, particularly one funded with public money. That program would be in direct competition with our own programs, which are funded through the industry. We also question the narrative about the shortage of qualified workers available. For example, between IBEW Local 110, which is in St. Paul, and IBEW Local 292, today there are close to 400 of our members out of work and waiting for a job. And we also have over 700 individuals on our waiting lists join our apprenticeship program. We are, more than happy to work with the committee and with Representative Bierman on addressing some of these concerns. And again, we do believe that this effort is very, very important and will be a real benefit to working families around the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So I have a question for Ms. Coppola. So I'm just curious from your perspective, if you could describe a little bit what the need is in the area that you're working in and what you're able to actually achieve with the current funding levels that your agency's provided.
Thank you, Chair Long. The need for households, as I mentioned, we serve 9,000 households with energy assistance and 100 with weatherization services. So I think that sort of shows the opportunity we'd have to help. Not every single one of those 9,000 units would necessarily need weatherization, but the vast majority would. And so I think additional resources and especially the flexibility of state funding to really leverage those federal dollars as far as we can, and the flexible funding would be fantastic. And I don't know, Mr. Chair, if I could just speak for one moment to one of the, and maybe the apprenticeship term was the wrong term, and I apologize for that, kind of a novice at some of this, but one of the things we do at our shop that we think has real potential is we're working with low-income people. Many of them haven't had opportunity to work in professional settings. So like in our Head Start program, for example, we're always trying to find people to work in the early childhood sector. And so we call it an apprenticeship program at our shop, where we have a Head Start parent help out in the classroom if they're interested in children, gain a little bit of those skills, and then we help get them the certifications they need to then be able to work in early childhood. And so we'd love to do something similar, however, whatever the wording is, whatever the structure is, to find low-income clients who can, you know, get a little bit of experience and then kind of pipeline them into the field. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Ms. Quipo. And I just have one more question for Mr. Grant. So the working group, I think, came up with a recommendation of trying to get to 10,000 homes weatherized a year from our current level of around 2,000. And I think I'd said 13,000 for Massachusetts. I went back and looked. It's 18,000 a year that they're doing. So we wouldn't be anywhere near the top of states for that. But I'm just wondering if you've been working in the weatherization business for a long time, and I was just wondering if you could reflect on what a 10,000 a year would mean over time.
Thank you, Chair Long and members, and thanks for the question. An increase from what we're doing now to 10,000 a year would be a very significant increase in the rate at which we can weatherize homes. And because the program is targeted to the lowest income individuals in the families in the state, this would have a huge impact in those communities where those people live. As I mentioned, it not only brings those homes up to a level of energy efficiency where the energy costs that those individuals are facing can be much more easily managed, but it also increases the value of the home itself, contributing to the tax base in that community and to the stock of affordable housing that otherwise we simply are running out of. And so for all of those reasons, the kind of increase that is contemplated in the work group report and that we think we can accomplish through Representative Bierman's bill and the influx of federal funding that we're anticipating, I think really gives us a chance to start meeting production at those levels.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This could I ask a question, Mr. Bierman?
Please.
All right. Just a quick question on the. So this is a fairly new program that you're proposing, and using state dollars for it. So you'll be replacing roofs, you know, some more of that exterior bones type work. Because state dollars are used, will it be required that prevailing wage be paid to these contractors or workers that do this?
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Swazinski. So I think that, I mentioned, the bill is a work in progress. We're still needing to discuss this whole concept of the apprenticeship program, look a little deeper in how the training works in the one facility that is active in Minnesota. We are going to need to upgrade this significantly. So I guess I would say we need to have more discussions about this as far as, you know, how the approach will work, since some of these weatherization projects have such a different level of repair work going on. It's not like everyone needs a complete new roofing, for instance, or a complete electrical system. They involve, you know, repairs, which are maybe local. And when you look at the fact that two-thirds of this work is done in rural Minnesota and trade availability varies, it's going to be a little bit of a we're going to have to just study the issue a little further and understand what's available workforce-wise and how these projects will play out and how this will work as far as, I'm talking about individual small unit repairs. So it may be local contractors that are doing most of this work in those areas. Hope that answers your question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bierman, not really. Just asking you straight up, will, because of state law, with using state dollars, will whether it's a union contractor, whether it's just a local contractor, will these organizations have to pay prevailing wage, not just simply bid a project out to do these projects under this program?
Maybe Mr. Eliff could help out with the underlying law. He knows.
Mr. Chair and Representative Swazinski, there is nothing in the bill that speaks directly to that.
Representative Bierman?
Yeah, Representative Chair Long, I would just say that, you know, we certainly are going to follow state law as it applies.
Okay.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. And then because this is such a different style of project, because you're actually doing, you know, nuts and bolts, electrical, roofing, potentially some really, you know, basic things of what a home is. Will you be requiring proof? You know, it's been said that these are people that can't get funding other places. Will you be requiring proof that they've been turned down for a loan, traditional loan? As a kind of a good filter to make sure that, you know, the banks have been able to do their due diligence so that we're not, if people can pay for it, we want them to pay for it. But if they need help, maybe the state can help. But I think asking for actual documents that they've been turned down to actually do this work from a bank might be helpful rather than just base it on certain things. What are your thoughts on that?
Senator Bierman, and then maybe Mr. Grant would want to chime in as well.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to suggest that as well. Mr. Representative Swazinski, I think that there is certain policies in place now that are in place to ascertain whether people qualify for the program. I do not believe that I've heard any proof of ineligibility from a bank is required when we're dealing, as most of the testifiers have commented, these are low income people. They have many of them with disabilities, and they have already are prioritized based on needs. So, I mean, there is an investigative process to that already. I don't know, unless Mr. Grant can tell us, I don't think a bank denying a bank loan is a required part of that process currently.
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman, and to represent Swazinski, as we discussed earlier this morning, the program itself, the DOE program, does not require proof of having been denied a bank loan in order to receive weatherization services. And I believe that the rationale is, as has been stated, that these are the lowest of the low-income residents in the state. To ask that they assume additional debt to achieve the kind of benefits that we have described is not compatible with the current program and is not something that we would recommend be a feature of the supplemental funding that is outlined in Representative Bierman's bill.
Representative Swazinski, did you have further questions?
I think the point is that, you know, essentially what you'd be doing is kind of a bank would take a good set of assets. So while their income may qualify them, you know, I've heard stories of, you know, crews showing up and the folks are driving fancier cars and the construction company actually doing the work. And they qualify, but, you know, there may be other assets or other things out there that could be going on. I think if we're talking about using, whether that's federal dollars coming in from the state that are borrowed from the people or not, there's debt being incurred to fund these projects. It's just not necessarily the people that are receiving the benefit. So.
Thank you, Representative Swazinski. Representative Flipper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bierman, for your work on this bill and on the working group. So the question for you or for some of your testifiers, I certainly see a big need for weatherization in my district, especially in smaller communities, more rural communities, places where I don't see fancy cars at all. I'm curious if you have statistics on the weatherization need in Greater Minnesota, or the percentage of the program that goes to residences or households in Greater Minnesota. Does anyone have that information or can provide some more context on that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bierman.
Representative Lippert, yes. We did look at some of those facts and figures last year when I was advocating for the task force in a bill. And we looked across counties in Minnesota, and we saw that the need, the eligibility existed in every county. And in most counties, the people that qualified and actually got service was approximately 8 to 12% of those that that were eligible. So the need is great in every single community. And what we're doing is so few that that's the purpose that we want to proceed with this and make sure that we can expand the program and serve more of our constituents' needs.
Mr. Grant, did you want to add to that?
Just to say, Mr. Chairman, that the rough funding split between dollars going to the metro area and to Greater Minnesota is about one-third to the metro and two-thirds to Greater Minnesota in terms of how the funding is distributed. So I think that speaks to Representative Lippert's question about how these dollars are impacting in rural parts of the state.
Liz Quapula, I don't know if you wanted to chime in considering that you are a rural provider.
I can certainly relate to Representative Lippert's point that a lot of folks in rural areas are really struggling economically and really have this need. The other thing I'd add about, you know, back to the former question about getting sign-offs from banks, I just think, you know, so many of our rural folks, it's 20 or 30 miles to get to a bank to, you know, to get that paperwork. So while I appreciate the, you know, the idea of making sure that resources are going to the places with the most need, have a lot of need in our area of the state. Thank you.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that we've talked about the economic development opportunities, but I guess I'm really more specifically interested in, you know, job creation, wages, the multiplier effect of, you know, the job creation opportunities that are afforded, you know, in this legislation.
Great. Maybe we'll go to Mr. Grant, then perhaps Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A lot of the economic benefit and multiplier effect, Representative Hornstein, as you have asked about, and how many jobs are being created by the program, are outlined in the work group report to the committee. I don't have those numbers right at my fingertips. If Ms. Grancy is still on, she may be able to speak to that more accurately than I would be able to.
Director Grancy, you were phoned a friend. Any thing you want to add on the, the job creation?
Thank you, Chair Long, Representative. I can get for you the specific numbers. I'm not going to try to pull it from my mind, but I will note that there's a wide variety of a contractor base and local service provider base needed. So we're talking a wide skill set, HVAC contractors, shell contractors, solar contractors, asbestos removal contractors, and electrical contractors, as well as those that perform work within the service providers, whether they're a shell-based crew, or if they are a contractor-based, they're still going out and serving as auditors and quality control inspectors. So there's quite a wide variety and opportunity. We also have seen that it really is a lifelong career. There are many that are starting to retire that have been in weatherization since the start of the program, which was over 45 years ago. So the idea and opportunity for a pipeline of workers across those fields is plausible.
Mr. Johnson, anything you wanted to add?
No, just beyond the fact that, you know, we see you know, weatherization as an opportunity, not only for our members, but for all of the trades to get work. And so we're supportive of that. And again, we're more than happy to work with the providers to find the workers that they need. And I think we already have this framework in place with the trade unions where we can find and produce these workers with the skills and the knowledge to do this work right and cost effectively.
Representative Hornstein, any follow-up?
No, thank you. That answers my questions, and I appreciated particularly the discussion of the specific kinds of jobs because, you know, they're generally good paying, and again, I think reverberate through the community. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I'll also just point out they're all over the state, which is a great benefit of the job creation. Representative Swazinski, I saw your hand go up and then come down. Did you have a question or are you
good? No, I'm good. I think it was asked there. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Great. All right. I'm not seeing further hands. Representative Bierman, any closing comments for your bill?
Just a thank you again to all the members on the task force. Did excellent work. We have a lot of information for folks to go through, and we can have a continued vigorous conversation on this bill, and look forward to bringing it back.
All right. Well, thank you so much to everybody who came and presented on this important topic today, and I certainly look forward to Representative Bierman, the continued refinement of this bill, and I'm very hopeful that we can bring this bill back in front of the committee for action later this year. Members, that's our business for today. And so with that, we are adjourned.